Ruth Elliott says, "I believe there is such a thing as self-esteem and self-image, but I do not think that it is something that you and I ought to be paying much attention to. Life is too short for that, as far as I'm concerned." She says, "I would much rather use the energy and the time that I have and direct it towards knowing God, worshiping God, loving God, finding out who He is, and daily praying that He will make me much more like Himself." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of author and teacher Elizabeth Elliott.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliott, talking with you about loneliness, this time distinguishing loneliness from solitude. Solitude is something that we don't really seem to know a whole lot about these days. People seem to avoid it like the plague. They run here, they run there. They try to be with people, have somebody talking to them or music blasting. Solitude has really fallen on hard times, it seems. Loneliness carries a connotation of pain for most of us, where solitude, for some of us at least, is pure pleasure. And I suppose most of us at least have had some experience of wishing for solitude when we had been with people and too much noise for too long. But there are people who really find solitude a very painful thing. When we think of solitary confinement, that conjures up images of perhaps one of the worst kinds of human pain. But solitude is something for which we should be grateful, something for which we should try to arrange so that we can learn to turn our solitude into prayer. I remember going to a seminar one time. It was a whole day's seminar, and I cannot remember anything at all that was said except the very first sentence, which was, "You can turn your loneliness into solitude and your solitude into prayer." And that statement has been with me for a long time. Paul Tillich, theologian and philosopher, wrote in his book, The Eternal Now, "Being alive means being in a body, a body separated from all other bodies. And being separated means being alone. This is true of every creature, and it is more true of man than of any other creature. He is not only alone, he also knows that he is alone. This aloneness he cannot endure. Neither can he escape it. It is his destiny to be alone and to be aware of it. Not even God can take this destiny away from him." That's the end of the quotation. When God created the world, he saw each thing that he made as good. But when he made man, he saw that it was not good that man should be alone. Man is a social creature like the animals. They move in pairs or flocks or herds. God designed the answer to Adam's aloneness, a woman. They were a couple, meant to answer to each other. Each, however, was still alone in a profound sense, in a separate body, alone before God, bearing his image, answering to him, responsible. This aloneness was a good thing, for everything in the garden was perfect. But something happened. Sin destroyed the perfect harmony of the universe. The relationship of man with God and of human beings with each other was fractured. Man now knows that he is alone. You and I are very much aware of our aloneness. It is not only an experience of solitude, which is not necessarily a bad thing in itself, but it is also an experience of deprivation. We feel that we're missing something, that we've lost something. Human companionship doesn't even suffice in the long run. Disobedience back then in the Garden of Eden is what ruined human companionship, and our aloneness becomes loneliness, a pain in itself. Some of us, as I mentioned, do love solitude, and I love it so much that I actually get up early in the morning in order to guarantee that I have a little bit of it, before the phone rings, before anyone comes to the door, before the work of the day has to begin, I get up, and I have the great privilege and joy of being able to look out of my front windows over the ocean. Our house is on the coast of Massachusetts, and I watch the dawn come up. Our house faces directly south, which means that we get to see both the sunrise and the sunset. Sunrise on our left and the sunset on our right. I love looking out at the ocean in its peacefulness, as it usually is, or in its storms. I love watching the sun come up and the gulls fly to the island where they seem to spend the day. And then in the evening, I sit in my chair and watch the gulls fly back to the island where they spend the night. The island where they spend the day, incidentally, for some of you older folks, is Norman's Woe. You remember that poem, The Wreck of the Hesperus. Well, the Hesperus was a ship that was wrecked on Norman's Woe, which is not very far from our house. I love that silence. Just this morning, I was able to sit out on the balcony. It was very misty. In fact, it was foggy. I could hear the sounds of four different foghorns. I love that, too. And my daughter, who lives in Southern California, lives in a very different kind of a place and has a very different life than I do. There's nobody else in the house except my husband and one young man who lives in the back of the house and helps us take care of the place. They're both very quiet. My daughter, on the other hand, is a young mother. She has five children, and the oldest is 11. She has told me how difficult it is for her to find a quiet time. I may be speaking with some young mothers who have found it almost impossible to find quiet time. But you'd love to have solitude. It's important that every one of us be alone with God. If not for an hour, then maybe for 5 minutes. I've asked my daughter how she does it, and she's told me that her schedule, which worked before the children were born, just simply doesn't work. When she has a nursing baby, she may be up two or three times during the night feeding the baby, or she may be up with other children who are sick, one thing and another. You know how it is. And Valerie has said that she has prayed that the Lord will help her to find that quiet time. And sometimes he wakes her up at 3 o'clock in the morning when the house is totally quiet. And she will then get up and spend a little bit of time with the Lord, whatever time she feels that she should spend, given the fact that she does also need to sleep. There have been other times when she hasn't been able to have any time during the night or early in the morning, and she says to her amazement, in answer to prayer, God has seen to it that the children actually took naps, all of them at the same time. She has also arranged a special quiet time for her children in the afternoon. When they're past napping age, each child has to be in his or her own room alone for a whole hour. They can play, they can read, they can sleep if they want to. But she's teaching them what to do with solitude. In Psalm 46, we read, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Now, that's ancient poetic language. But have you ever felt as though your earth had been removed, that everything that you had depended on, like mountains, had suddenly moved somewhere where it didn't belong? God is our refuge at a time like that. And in verse 10, the psalmist says this, "Be still and know that I am God." Maybe we could even translate it in modern English, "Shut up and know that I am God. Be quiet long enough to look up into his face, to speak with him, to lay your needs before him, to open his word and ask him to give you some word of encouragement or comfort or instruction, and to pray. It takes solitude. Are you lonely? Turn your loneliness into solitude, and your solitude into prayer. There is so much noise in our lives. Traffic, machinery, chainsaws, lawnmowers, airplanes, phones, dishwashers. Even the music is that shrieking, thundering noise, which some people seem to like so much, but which I can hardly bear. Noise. What do we do about it? Maybe you have to go into a closet. Maybe you could go and sit in your car in the garage and get a little bit of quiet for 5 minutes. Maybe if you're a young mother, you can't go anywhere by yourself because you have to be where you can hear the children, but you can go into the bathroom. You can go somewhere for 5 minutes or 6 minutes, whatever fits into your schedule. And remember, the Lord knows all about that schedule. Your work as a young mother is God's work. You are cooperating with Him in caring for that child. There is no more important work in the world. And for you older women who are lonely because of the empty nest, I'm going to be talking to you one of these days, particularly about that syndrome. But if you have more solitude than you thought you wanted, I urge you to turn that solitude into prayer. One of my favorite hymns that I often use in my own devotional time begins with these lines, "Speak, Lord, in the stillness, while I wait on Thee. Hushed my heart to listen, in expectancy. Speak, O blessed Master, in this quiet hour. Let me see Thy face, Lord, feel Thy touch of power. For the words Thou speakest, they are life indeed, living bread from heaven, now my spirit feed."
As Elizabeth Elliot has said, anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. She's been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years. This is Joy Rayleigh, inviting you back again next time for another visit with author and teacher Elizabeth Elliot on Gateway to Joy. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network. Thank you.